listening to Your Ultimate Life with Kellen Flukiger, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hello, hello. Welcome to the show today, Your Ultimate Life, here where we talk about ways to create life in purpose, prosperity, and joy. I'm always excited about guests that I have to talk about with us. Today, I have Dr. Denise Trudeau-Poskus, who's just getting ready to release a book, and who's also off tomorrow to go to Paris to speak. So welcome to the show, Dee.
Thank you, Kellen. It's an honor to be here, truly.
All right. Well, I'm excited to have you here and to get a chance to talk about the way that the ways that you're adding good to the world and the kind of stuff that you work on. So I don't do introductions, really. It'll all sort of come out in the conversation. Since you're taking off tomorrow, what's that about?
I was invited to Paris to speak to, I think it's about 100 entrepreneurs, mostly women, powerful women that are like stuck in an area. And so I get to speak on my book, Disappointment. And also really, it's called the Soul Path. So we're going to do a workshop on our presentation on that. I'm excited about that.
What is the Soul Path?
So many achievers and entrepreneurs like will think of the external thing that they need to do and the next thing. So it's the Soul Path that came up with a lot of the work on alignment. So your being part. And I created what's called a Soul Path Manifesto, which has 7 parts, and we kind of dissect, go in there, and they reflect, like, one is the archetype part. And anyway, there's 7 parts that they dig into and get more clear about what their soul path is so they can stay aligned and still be very successful, but they're doing what they're here to do, not what somebody else might be here to do.
You know, one of the things that people talk about is the seeming, I don't think it's a dichotomy, but the seeming difference between things like soul path and what we're supposed to do and that sort of language and the nuts and bolts of earning money and bottom line and growing business. And people see those sometimes as incompatible. Yet here you are flying to Paris to talk to 100 successful entrepreneurs about that sort of thing. Do you feel like there's some kind of difference, or are they really connected?
Well, I mean, your wisdom is there around that. And we know if we're more aligned, our business does profit better because we then embody what impact we want to be. We're not just putting it out there. We are the impact. And so I think it's very important that it's the foundation for any business person. And when my clients find it, they have so much more freedom to grow their business in the way they want to. It's not just about the bottom line. They're still fiscally responsible and they're still growing, but it's then about the people along the way, which I think is so powerful and important. More than ever, really, truly, it's thinking about those people that you surround yourself and that are part of your business, and then how do they reach your audience and your clients. So I think they're very intertwined.
I do too. And yeah. So, you know, I agree with that. I don't see any split there. I just know some people, you know, they talk about the idea that it's hard to. I had a client once who was really worried about talking about those kinds of things because they felt like it would be off-putting to people that were oriented around massive wealth. And it's really the same. So tell us about this book you mentioned. What's going on with that? Tell us what it is, why you wrote it, and when it's coming out, and that kind of thing.
Well, can I share you were my mastermind coach too? Because I'll share that. I wouldn't have written the book at all without your help. And it was sitting there, and didn't know what book I wanted to write. But this one came out. It's called Bounce, The Hidden Power of Frustration. And it came out because it is one of the areas that I dislike. I mean, disappointment is so disappointing, as we can say. But it's also, like, especially last few years with my clients, I notice a pattern that high achievers and entrepreneurs alike have to deal with disappointment, or most of them, though, in the research, they actually avoid it. They don't want to feel it. They don't like the feeling. So I really got interested. Now it's like 3 years ago, but as a coach, how can I help them face it? What's going on in their brain about that? And how can we make sense of it so we can relish it almost, oddly enough. And so the book really talks, the first part is, why is it so important we lean into disappointment? You know, not suppress it, not run away from it, but really like lean in wholeheartedly and say, this is great. I'm feeling so disappointing. So the first part is all the research, and I won't give away the hidden piece in your brain that does this, but there is a special part in your brain that's reserved just for disappointment, which made me even like this topic even more. I'm like, that is fantastic. It is a special part. And it also triggers the five other emotions like regret, shame, frustration. So I think we do need to talk about that, the why of it and the science of it, because as we can explore that, it gives us a lot of freedom to not hide from it. So that's the first part, just diagnoses what it is and puts it straight forward. The second part is the model I came to putting it together over the last few years. What are the pieces I need it? And so there's four phases in that model. And it is, how do you apply it? If you're going to take the book and you want to do some of your own work, there's some coaching tools in there just to get started and apply it. Then the third part is really, how can you integrate it in your entrepreneurship, your leadership, or your teams? Because that's something a lot of entrepreneurs ask is, if I learn something, how can I help my team to learn it? So I thought that was pretty important to share case studies, but also here's a way you can frame it to your team, because disappointment, everybody knows the concept, but most people don't discuss the concept. So it gives you a nice path to lay it out. So I find that would be very helpful to entrepreneurs. And we're having a lot more of discussions around that now that the clients that I work with know I'm writing the book. It's just suddenly they're very aware. Wow, why didn't we think about this more?
Yeah. You know, I noticed that as I read the book, I noticed, well, the first piece I noticed strongly was a lot of conversation and research that you did and talk about the neuroscience of it. And I found that really interesting. It's, you know, when we don't understand that, we tend to just say, well, I'm disappointed or I'm frustrated or one of those things. And right. We don't really know what's happening and we don't really know what to do with it. And I found one of the really interesting pieces about it was to follow the path through the brain that you laid out in the book. So I found that, really interesting.
Yeah. Right. Well, because then it puts it right in front of us. So one thing about achievers, if you share the science of something, it helps them to call it out. It helps them to say, okay, statistically, that's valid now. I know that. The path also, when I share it with my clients, they suddenly realize it's a biological response. And that's why they avoid it, because it is shooting so many chemicals into our body and doesn't affect you don't just stay disappointed. Wouldn't that be lovely? I'm just disappointed. People get frustrated. And then of course, they go into shame and then they go in regret. And so that path is almost like a ping pong, you know, up in your brain. And knowing that path, we can say, hey, nothing's wrong with us. This is how we're wired. And that, Kellen, is why I'm like, that's the hidden power of disappointment. We kind of missed the boat, like running from it. There's a hidden power in that, knowing the science to it, what I've come to understand, at least.
Yeah, absolutely. So what is it that brought you to this neuroscience piece? Like, you talk about that a lot. You've studied it.
I like it.
What is it that brought you to understand? Because I agree, when we understand it better, we can, we don't treat it as shameful or bad or something's wrong with us.
Right.
We understand it's okay. It's just what happens. But I'm curious about your journey. What brought you to the study of this neuroscience stuff? What brought you there?
Well, I started pre-med, so I'm, you know, really love science, always love science and biology and that sort of thing. I dove into it, I don't know, over a decade ago, because there was so much more access to the research articles in it. And there was something about the focus on language. That's where I started with. I thought there's got to be these things called trigger words. And then there's got to be things that people don't get triggered. And I was curious about that. Like, we can talk better. We don't have to talk so archaic, you know, use language, use, I should always do this. You should have done that. So it's maybe now 15 years. I started with emotional intelligence and it led into, you know what? They started researching just language on the brain and what it triggers. And that was my stepping stone to be so fascinated in, to one, the access, you know, you can actually access the research articles, which I love reading, but it gave me insight to how I could coach better and help people better and faster, right? If we can use our science of our brain and our, you know, heart brain and gut brain, I find that my clients can adapt and create behaviors faster. So that's kind of my entry into that.
What, so you mentioned the heart brain, gut brain, and I know that one of the things that you have mentioned to me in other conversations is three brains, the three brain kind of thing. I'd like you to do two things. Talk a little bit about what that is, because I agree, when we understand how our bodies are working and how that is triggered and, you know, happens from our mind and our body, and we can get out of this idea of something's wrong with me and the shame and the I should have this, that, and the other, and all the sort of disempowering language that we tend to use. But talk a little bit about this three brain thing, because I've heard that. I knew another lady who coached around three brains some years ago, but I didn't really ever get a chance to talk to her a lot about it. So tell us a little bit about what that is and how that helps us make better decisions and run our business and lives better.
Yeah. So from my training, so in 1990s, actually was a cardiologist that first found out the heart has, he looked and he realized it has neurons like the brain. And he was fascinated with that whole concept that the heart can send messages. And so the heart brain, they found out, and HeartMath is probably the institute that's probably most known for their work of focusing just on the heart brain. But your heart has its own unique neurons, and people can have like 40,000 all the way to 70,000. And they find out, like, leaders like you that are more compassionate but embody it, they will have access to 70,000 neurons. Like, that's a lot. And what it means is they can sense people, they can hold a space for people. And those messages that they send to their brain and their gut is about connection. That's what the heart brain does, is am I connected? Am I not connected? How do I get connection? So that's the theory that they are applying. So that's the heart brain's just focus. Our head brain, so there's different parts of it, but most people live in the rational brain. So they're doing, not being. And the rational brain, it has actually less neurons going on and activated. But the rational brain says, I'm going to forecast something.
Does that mean my rational brain is stupider because there's less neurons?
Well, if we're just in rational, we're kind of in remote control, right? Versus when we're in higher brain, we have access to the abundance of so much neural access and activity.
Keep going. I didn't mean to interrupt you, but when you said less neurons, I thought, maybe that means I'm stupider when I have less neurons running.
Right. So when people get into rational brain, they're doing rote, the same old, you know, kind of a crystallized brain. The gut brain, which is so fascinating, its sole purpose is you're safe or you're not. You're safe or you're not. And so it is the fastest route. And I found that fascinating. The head to the gut is not as fast as the gut perceiving. So there's neurons there that perceive, is this safe or not safe? So, for example, if you have a client that, you know, is going to go, I don't know, let's say like speaking on a stage, never has, their brain and their gut will say this is not safe and send all sorts of signals like you can't do this, don't do this. It will protect the safety of the person. So they're always working together. And that's why neural language is so important, because we can say out loud to our gut, like, this is safe, I am curious, and it stops a signal of threat. So the brain will either elicit, this is a way that's positive, we call it reward way, or threat way. So if you're telling your brain this is a threat, or you perceive it, it sets all kinds of signals, right? Constantly, very fast. But if you tell, you know, threat or reward, whatever you tell yourself, or if you don't know how to read your signals, and this is what you're very aware of, if you can embody your signals from your body and understand their signals and stop and listen, like let's say you get a gut response, stop and listen and ask a good coaching question. Like, what is here and what could be making me feel unsafe? It's not true because obviously I'm safe. What could be here? And at first when I heard that, I wasn't into the embodiment of coaching. I thought it was a little loopy. But it's very powerful to be able to ask, literally sit in that space, breathe through it and say, so what is here? And then use neural language to guide it through those pieces. So what you're wanting is alignment of all three. Yeah.
Do you find that it's easy or difficult to explain? Like, I don't know, correct me, but before I ask the question, let me ask this. What kind of clients do you mostly work with? I know it's entrepreneurs, but what kind of clients are maybe there isn't a main kind?
Well, yeah, I started with executive clients, you know, that sort of client that they're high achievers are going to next level. But as of maybe 12 years ago, I really moved to what we call small giants. So they are entrepreneurs that run $1 to $20 million businesses. And they want to be streamlined. They want to have high impact. They want to be about contribution, and their growth mindset is there. So in that mix, I get high achievers. Like I have lawyers. I have professionals that are high achievers that are wanting to get out of their own way. That's a smaller group, but that is still a group. And they tend to be in their, you know, anyway, 30s and 40s, both groups, some, you know, 50s that they're finding me because they've been making it difficult for themselves, and they know they want to make it better. And they feel very responsible for two things will change for them. One is something will happen in their family, and they'll feel really responsible that how they're leading their family. And then the second thing would be something in their career is just empty, or their business isn't. It's just empty, stagnant. So that's what we call the soul path readiness. They're like ready to listen.
Do you find it difficult or easy to introduce to them and then help them understand and tap into these three brain sort of alignment exercises? Is that a hard concept or an easy one to teach for you?
Well, so what I found, it's as easy as we make it as a coach. I don't use like orbicipital lobe, you know, or ventral medial lobe. You know, I tend to start with a foundation and build up on that, and then acronyms. And one thing a good leader will do is intellectual stimuli. So they will bring, as a coach, it's okay to push that level and go have them look some of that up. But then connect it to where it is in the brain. I used to be a biology teacher for a long time. So it's very easy for me. So that would be here, that connects here. And of course, PFC has the four parts here. I find it very easy. I will say new clients, it's kind of like the fire hydrant slightly, is what they say. It's like a fire hydrant, not a fire hose. But then they start putting the pieces together. So,
yeah, no, I get that. And I noticed, you know, in both in talking to you and in reading your material, you have a good command of the language and parts, and I didn't know that you had taught biology. You said you were pre-med, and I know that you have a PhD, but I actually don't know what your PhD is in. Is it in neuroscience, or what is
it? My PhD is in human science, so we can have neuro and emotional intelligence. So it's leadership, the practical and the theoretical, and then human science. So all the sciences relate to human behavior change. And that was the other thing that neuroscience started getting interesting in that. Yeah, so yeah, biology and a background, just kind of understanding the way we tick is fascinating to me.
And I notice when I'm talking to you and in reading your book that you have a really good command of those different parts. Let's talk about a little bit about leadership. You mentioned that in terms of the family, and I also think obviously it applies to leadership of yourself and your business and those that are people that are looked to you. What do you think is going on? It feels to me Yeah. Like there's a great need, an ever growth, and like an exploding need for leadership, for people that are both willing to lead in effectively and who are willing to do the work that it takes to learn how to do that. So talk a little bit about leadership and how you see that.
Well, you know, it's kind of like the word communication. Everybody thinks they're communicating and they're really just talking, and communication actually is very complex. Leadership is thrown so much in with management. And I've had people say, well, they're the same. They're really not. So there, when you said there is a need, and yes, there is a need, more so now than ever, right? I wrote a Forbes article 3 years ago that the soft skills are really hard skills. We need them more than ever. So a leader is going to develop all the soft skills, emotional intelligence, like listening to people, directing people, understanding what level they are, understanding their decision-making. It is a growth mindset that becomes a leader, because a leader invests in their learning consistently. They don't give up in it. They don't let their brain crystallize. So leadership, studying it, there's actually frameworks. You could be a servant leader. You can be a transformational, authentic. And when somebody can find a track that guides them on the leadership, they'll really start to separate themselves out from management, because management says something's wrong, let me make a policy. Leadership says something wrong, how can I lead that differently? And how can we grow in this learning? It's a big difference of a pre-frame and a maneuverability, I would say. Leaders have a command of their language. They understand. And that's why they're so fascinated when they come to me, because they don't want to keep getting triggered and respond in a triggered way. They once they get a hold of the fact, I don't have to be triggered, and I actually will have more influence if I just calmly help navigate people. That's probably the biggest shocker for people. Like, I can navigate people with influence and not coerciveness or anger. And so more and more people are leaving corporate because it's not leadership. It is management. And they feel alone. They feel like a number, and they don't feel seen. And those environments are just not acceptable anymore to a lot of people, right? They were already facing a lot of challenges. They really want the space of a leader that's going to invest in them, invest in their growth. And that's what I love about these small giants. At first, these are not huge corporations. They don't have lots of funds to do this, but they'll invest what they can because they know every time they invest, their company grows. But they also know the phrase they use, I want to go to work, run a company every day and love the people there. And I think that's so fantastic that there's people and more people that are just not willing to settle for anything less of just let's do the technical.
Yeah. What do you think's going on? I agree with you. People are less willing to put up with the old style of management by exception, right? And negative things like that. And people are looking for, you use the word love, and that is a few years ago, 10 or 20 years ago, that wouldn't have been a word used in corporate speak at all. And I use it all the time. I know you do. And I think that it is an essential piece of this shift in the world that's going on. What do you think's happening that people both not only are yearning for, but are insisting on nurturing environments of growth and opportunity where leadership exists, whether they're the actual leader or something like that? What's happening that's making people say, no more, I'm not doing that?
Yeah. Well, I think there's several factors. I think there's people like you that are out in the world saying we can do something different. And that has a huge ripple effect. So they're listening more for people like you that are doing that. So that's one. But secondly, the economics, the way they shift, you can follow the path of every 25 years, there's a shift in, and we're kind of in an awakening shift where people say spirituality or compassion, or however they tie together, is essential because we're a little lost. COVID even strengthened that people got very alone and very lost. And so you're seeing a big camp of people talk about it. 2003 is when they still really started publishing articles that spirituality should be an essential part of being a leader. In fact, that leaders that were embodied in their, you know, their soul path, they had teams that had higher engagement, less turnover, higher productivity, higher synergy. And so when you start getting researchers that produce that, it does trickle down, you know, finally to leaders, and the leaders are looking for it. I think that's the thing, is they're feeling that emptiness that says, I'm only here for so long, and I really want to make a positive impact. I want a legacy that doesn't mean just numbers, or it can mean an invention, but it also has a positive impact in the world. And so it's not one thing. I think it's several things coming together. And the more people that stop settling, the more you're going to see that wave move into every business. Like you said, you really, in coaching 14 years ago, when I really started the spiritual work, I didn't really say we're going to talk about spirituality. It just was not a place. But now we talk about it as the highest intention. What's your highest intention? And it's so natural for people to go there and want that more. It's what I'm seeing, at least.
I couldn't agree with you more. And I think that having the courage, both you and I as coaches, mm-hmm. and to train leaders to use whatever words make sense, mm-hmm. but yeah. to allude or to acknowledge, at least to acknowledge the existence of that other part of us. You know, it used to be leave all that crap at home and just come in here and do some stuff that contributes to the bottom line. And there was never any such thing as separation. We pretended there was, with disastrous consequences. Yes. And I think you're instructing people or creating space. I think what's really happening is you're creating space for people to tell the truth, for stuff they always felt and didn't dare talk about. What about that?
Yeah, I think that's what we're doing, Kellen. It's given the permission, and it's far surpassing if people mix up spirituality with religion. That's not what we're talking about at all. It's just really the high, you know, the higher platform that you're here to do. And when you give that space, and there's no, the key, as you always say, and it's true, when you hold a space of non-judgment as they work through that, that gives them the space for that to flourish and ponder and become the central theme, not the out, you know, the outlying theme. It becomes a central theme, and they move and navigate life so much differently. They have higher accountability for people, actually. It doesn't mean that they suddenly soft. They're actually very accountable to people, and they'll let people go that is not a fit or doesn't feel like they want to grow, and that's okay. There's no judgment. And that's the piece that's so fascinating to teach. So like one of the soul path areas is defragging your ego, which I love working with the ego because we all have it. Like, this is lovely, isn't it? So when we work in that and explain this ego, we can't get rid of it. But how do you set boundaries around it? How do you not let it put you in fear all the time? It gives leaders the permission to have courage to talk. I mean, courageously, in really good conversations with their team members. Like, I get to hear conversations that give you the chills because they're in awe. They're talking about forgiveness. They're talking about how they care about each other. And this can be anywhere from lawyers. It could be technical people. It's HVAC people. It's construction workers. It's not just professionals. It's the whole gamut. Everybody has a spiritual path. And people really, when they get the space, just really treat each other with so much more dignity and respect.
What a glorious thing to have happen. So something that I notice about people that are in personal development and people that are coaches or people that write books, both of which are true of you, is that there's always stuff that happens, experiences that they've had in their lives that drive them to this developmental yearning, the yearning to develop themselves and then to share their development with others. What's something or a couple of things that happened to you or for you that made you realize how important this topic of disappointment and all of its interesting tentacles, which I wasn't even really aware of, at least the way you've described them until I read your book. Uh-huh. What happened to Dr. D that made that an important thing to do right now?
Oh, I love how you said that. I think it's what you and I talk about, in the fact that when you get enough insight, it's not to wait for perfection, it's to share it. And it felt like I was seeing everybody kind of skirting the issue. And then when I started working on the book, that's the issue, that was the discussion, this disappointment. And when I went back in time, I talk about the story in the book. I get disappointed with people pretty easily growing up. I talk about a story of my father saying he was going to build a merry-go-round. And I, as an intuitive, have these grand, very lavish ideas in my head, and I'm aware of that. But I'm also hoping the world would just do them, right? So my lavish idea literally combined a carousel and a merry-go-round, and it had carousel horses on it. It was just very, this is what you're going to make. I know it. And the complexity of that is, so I had this picture, my sister had this picture, and the merry-go-round was going to be great and we could ride on it. And my father worked so hard on it. And when he took the tarp off, it literally was nothing like I had pictured. His picture of a merry-go-round is a circle, you know, that you can get on and you can, you know, move around. He was being practical, but he was also being very inventive. But I remember when I started writing the book and we were mining ideas, and I'm like, oh my gosh, it goes back then when I was so disappointed in him, and I was also feeling so much shame for being disappointed in him, right? Because I was his daddy's girl. He was my best friend. And so that complexity, because we mined it, I'm like, oh my gosh. And it was kind of then I realized people get disappointed in people and we break connection. And we don't have to, but we do, because it's so undermined. It's not discussed. So I broke some connection with him. And going back, that was one of the pivotal pieces that I realized this has to be discussed, because you see it in business, but more important, you see it in families. Somebody disappoints, he did not mean to. He was very proud of what he did. He's a very good inventor. He was a very hard worker. But our pictures were not discussed. So we talk a lot in leadership, is communication means a triple loop. Show what you say you mean. Show it again, ask what the other person's interpreting, have them show it, and then together get the same picture. So that was the piece of the puzzle in the background. But then there was other parts in there that I just realized disappointment just kept coming back. And I really tend to find that achievers have a lot of that, because they expect so much of themselves and other people. A lot of themselves and other people.
What is a first thing? So let's say you have a high achiever, which you work a lot with, and they have a vision, and they're pushing forward, and they have a team, and there is that mismatch of expectations, mismatch of vision, and then this thing, you know, something happens. And they have the same experience, different scale, different thing, where they're disappointed. And they're sitting there thinking, duh, how could you not know what I meant? You know, sort of in their mind. And the employee or team is sitting there like, what are you talking about? Where do you start with that when there's that? Like, I'm thinking, duh, how could you not understand me? And on the other side, I'm thinking, how could you possibly, you know, that kind of thing. Where do you start with that kind of thing?
Well, and that's what happens, isn't it? And so what you start with is, sometimes you do an analogy. Especially if they're new, I'll put up like a picture of an Aston Martin, you know, a car that's a really cool car. And I'll just have the whole team like describe it not talk to each other, but write down all the descriptions of what you just saw. Mm-hmm. And in that room, let's say there's 20 on the team. there will only be a couple that have the same thing. Like it's blue. One will find new. We'll look at the label and say it's an Aston Martin. But from that, they notice that one or two things are the same, but they all have different meanings from that same picture. So we talk about, we cannot just think that people know what's in our head. It doesn't, it cannot work. It's not possible. That's why we're so special and unique. And so when we are sharing as a leader, so you shared this, how did you share it? Did you show it? Did you use the five W's, you know, what, when, where? Did you elicit that? Then did you check their interpretation? Because we always want to check their interpretation. So then we go around what was said, and then we ask the people, what was your interpretation? And we'll find that there'll be a little group that had the same interpretation, and they're kind of happy with that. And it might not be the interpretation of what the leader has, but other ones still have misread or misjudged. So we start with, it's not possible to infer what the other person is developing, saying, or conditioning that we have to do as a leader. So we really have to ask, how did you see that playing out in what I just said to you? What would be your next steps? Considering what we said and the timeline, what would be the next steps? And if I say it's got to be quality, you know, 5 out of 5, how much time would that take? So when they just notice that, they start noticing it everywhere, like, you know, buying a car, an apple, something for someone. We can literally put anything in the room. They realize there's no way that they can interpret something the same way. It's not how we're wired. I think that's what we're not wired that way, so we could have better conversations. That's my thought. It's like, then we can learn to talk to each other better and longer. But we try to just succinctly, like, let's talk. So that's the thing. I call it uncovering, not understanding each other, because I don't expect people to understand me. I'm still understanding me. But uncovering, now that's something different. That's something fun.
I love that distinction, mm-hmm. to engage them in talking back and forth until what is expressed together is a picture that sounds the same from all points of view. What is most fun for you? Like you said, you're traveling to the Midwest. You're going to be gone for a week after Paris. And so you travel a bit and maybe a lot to different groups and different kinds of companies in your 1 to 20 million. So there's a, you know, there's stress and worry and travel and all those kinds of things involved in your business. What is the most fun for you? The most rewarding, fun may be the wrong word, the most rewarding piece of your work?
I think the most rewarding is when the conversations, when somebody realizes that they made something bigger than it needed to be big. So they suddenly realize, oh my God, I waited 2 weeks to say this and I made it difficult. And if I just would go inward, I could have made that easier. So in coaching, you really have to have a sense of humor. And I catch them in their cliches because I'm not good at cliches. So that's maybe a gift that I'm not good at them. So when people use those cliches, something under a bandwagon, I don't know, something under a bus, and they'll, you know, I'm terrible at them. But catching them, I find that fun where you just say, so how is that working for you? Or so when you say that, that sounds like it's painful, like falling, something under a bus, like getting thrown under a bus. That's what it was. Get thrown under a bus. That sounds very painful to you. So I think my most fun is the interactions of the part where people realize they took themselves too seriously. And probably the most like powerful, just heartwarming is when they care so much about themselves and other people. Like when they come to that epiphany that they're worth it and the people around them are worth it. And it's so beautiful. So both those pieces are fun.
So it sounds like it's a wonderful thing when they feel safe enough to both give and receive that mutual admiration or caring or love.
Yeah.
When it becomes safe enough to express it, both giving and receiving. And, and when they realize that when the light of wisdom comes on and they realize they either made it harder than it needed to be or that everybody else was just as anxious to solve it as they were. And they were holding on to this thorn, this thistle, because they had this idea that that's what needed to happen.
Yeah.
I think, love it.
Right. Yeah. I find myself funny. Like how I, you know, like that's when I told you a disappointment. I found it so obnoxious, painfully, and then it's funny because humans, we have this other whole capacity. And sometimes we get these little blinders on and stay there. But I like how you said we call it psychological safety, of course, in coaching, is creating that space and having leaders create that. Because when you do that and it's confidential and it's safe, people can release things that they're in the back of their mind. And that's powerful, very powerful.
What do you expect? What are you excited about? There's one quarter of the year left.
Yeah.
Tomorrow's 1st of October, so we're starting the fourth quarter. Yeah. What are you going to give yourself for New Year's or Christmas? Like, what's on the horizon view for the next 90 days or so?
So, more speaking engagements. We have updated and enrolled. Stroke of Genius starts in the end of October, and we're going to do it, let it continuously roll. So, we revamped that. And I love that. That is a powerful mastermind of thought leaders, entrepreneurs, and achievers. And we have now a new community for them and the coaching of that. And it's creating that same space. So we're really excited about playing with that one and enrolling in that. Because we usually do it in the summer. Now we're like, nah, we're going to do it all year. And of course, I would like to start another book with you. That would be fun. I find writing, interestingly, you can learn out a lot about yourself writing. And so, and more podcasts. I kind of like that, where you get the opportunity to share your impact with people. And I love learning from the podcasters too. I'm so curious about the person that does that. So those are, I say professional goals. Our team is having fun with this, of course. And personally, I would like another horse, but that, we'll see about that.
Another horse. So so you're the rest of the year, you're going to do more speaking.
Yep.
You're going to get on some more shows to talk more about this growth. You mentioned Stroke of Genius, mm-hmm. which is a program that you have. What I'd like you to do now for a minute mm-hmm. is tell everybody all the programs that you have. Like, where can they find you? Where do they go to find more of Dr. D? What kind of programs do you have? Like, you said your sweet spot is $1 to $20 million businesses. Mm-hmm. And what do you offer them, and where can people who are listening find that?
Well, so the overarching, all my programs are blueeggleadership.com. Some people find it really easy to start at stuckcycles.com. It's a downloadable that you can just assess what's going on with you. Like, what are you stuck with? And, it's actually a little inventory that I did research on, and most achievers are stuck in one of the cycles. There's six, actually. We focus on five and then add the six as we go along. But that's kind of like our step into understanding what we do. And it's easy, and it's a free downloadable. We make it free now so they can drop in there. It's a gift for them to just mm-hmm. start exploring how are they getting in their way. So those are the two websites. We also have the Soul Path Found website, which is that manifesto. So we're doing a mini retreat November 5th with that. That's going to be really exciting. It's virtual so that people can access us. So if you're interested in looking at, you know, your soul path, that would be just go to Soul Path Found and you can get an invite from us for a virtual retreat November 5th. I think it's 8 to 11.
Cool. I'm going to repeat all those. You've got stuckcycles.com,
yep.
which we had the chance to visit about a little bit yesterday. Then we have blueeggleadership.com and soulpathfound.com. Yep. And all those focus really on living completely and in a whole and holistic and productive way. But they're different entry points.
Very different.
Into the journey of making the most out of yourself. And offer different things. Stuck Cycles is a free assessment, and Soul Path Found aims at a retreat, which is in a month. And Blue Egg Leadership is your flagship stuff, where you have stroke of genius and other tools that allow people to improve their leadership and to be personally fulfilled.
Yeah.
Did I miss anything?
Well, no, those are pivotal programs. We also do, I will mention CinnovationValleyLeadership.com. It's a, it.org. It is a nonprofit we have been doing, doing the coaching for 11 years. So it's phenomenal. It makes it accessible for any leader starting out. And it's virtual and in person, but if they go on my website, they'll find it. It'll say svla.org or CinnovationValleyLeadership.org.
Okay.
But we want to just invite everybody. Like you said, the movement is helping people feel fulfilled as well as giving them tools to lead really well and personally as an achiever or, you know, with their teams.
Well, there is a movement. There's something in the air. Something has changed. And we're feeling it and we're aware of it and people talk about it at all kinds of conferences and so forth. So what didn't I ask you about that would be useful for people who are trying to create? I mean, the premise of the show is to live your ultimate life, purpose, prosperity, and joy. So what teaching or wisdom didn't I ask you about that you think you should share with us?
Mm. Wow, that's a question. I think it's more a question for the people listening, like have in the back of their mind, they've been hearing like this is empty or there's something more and yet just are still listening and not doing anything. I think that means we always say that is not a signal for failure. It's a signal that you're ready to dig into something bigger than what you thought you had in front of you. So I encourage people to dive into some kind of coaching program, if not mine, something that you're doing, because it's so powerful to stay in the growth path as well as get all those skills to find freedom, like freedom in everything. There's going to be challenges, but might as well have all the tools to find them fascinating instead of infuriating.
I love that. And I think something you said struck a thought, and that is if you're hearing these intuitive hits, mm-hmm. that says, I'm not really happy. Yeah. I'm not really satisfied. I'm settling. And you're making excuses as to why that's okay. I think Dr. D just invited us to say yes to those intuitive things and dig around on YouTube or in books or to one of the websites that she gave you to see what's available. Because the truth is you are meant for more. The truth is you have more capability. The truth is you're not limited by anything that happened in the past.
Mm-mm.
The truth is you can create whatever you want and you can start today. And that's really the truth of your capability. Would you agree with that?
Resoundingly, yes. It really is literally you can start today and reshape it because it's our thoughts that create our beliefs, that create what's happening in our life. So we might as well make it a better life, listen to the intuition and say, let's go to someone that's willing to look at what's going on with me and help me through that.
So I have one final interesting question that is interesting for me, at least. AI is a big exploding thing that's happening to us right now. You know, it's like overwhelming. And some people are saying it's as big as anything that's ever happened since the wheel and fire. And maybe it is and maybe it isn't. How is that impacting you in any of your work yet?
Well, if you read the fourth turning, anything about with economics, every 25 years, there's something big in technology that reshifts. And if you're not watching it, remember, so it was the computers, then it was the internet. And it's about every 25 years. So we were due for something. I like watching it, but I'm not a first, what do you call that? Integrator. I like being
early adopter or something like that.
That's it. I love being skeptical and doing it my own way because I want to use every brain cell I still have. right. So I'm going to do that as a coach, though. It does mean you're going to want to be really good at creating space for people and creating insight to people because that's always going to be important. And as AI comes and corporations are going to use it more and more for, you know, all different sorts of things, even consulting those forms. People are already feeling alone. So if in my world, my thought is they're going to either, you know, really need coaching at a higher level, which we need to step it up as coaches, or they're going to realize that there's something else that they have to look into. So AI will solve a lot of things. It'd be fascinating. And a lot of people will go to it for a first, you know, a quick, I can just get it from there. You already see that.
You do.
Right?
You absolutely do. Well, I was just curious to get your first reaction. Dr. D, I want to thank you. We're just out of time. And I want to thank you for showing up and sharing your wisdom, your stories, and your insights about our own growth and opportunities. So thanks for being here with me on the show today.
Thank you so much, Kellen. It's an honor.
You're welcome. So I want you to take some time and get that book, Bounce, The Hidden Power of Disappointment. It's a fascinating read, and I learned a lot of stuff understanding the pathways through the brain that simple act of disappointment causes. Understanding it has certainly helped me, and you know, helping her write the book or editing it or whatever has taught me a lot. I want to assure you of the most important point that we made today, which is that nothing needs stop you. Nothing can get in your way unless you let it. And you do have, right this minute, the opportunity to change anything you want and to start your growth and path toward creating your ultimate life.
You're listening to Your Ultimate Life with Kellen Flukiger, only on LA Talk Radio.